Anat Shenker Osorio is joining us right now. The podcast is Brave New Words. She is an expert on messaging, and if Democrats were smart, she'd be listening to her all the way through some pretty strong victories in 2020. Anat, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
My absolute pleasure, because you and I am so glad to talk to you for this reason, is that for me, I started noticing, okay, 2006, we had strong Democratic, you know, platform put forward. We were strong Democrats. We won. Obama in 2008, 2010, we became the party of let's win over five moderate Republicans, and it failed. Then, of course, Obama in 2012, but 2014, 2016, major losses because, once again, the Democratic Party seemed to be forsaking itself for trying to win over a handful of moderate Republicans, and it wasn't working. We finally, in 2018, go back to a strong Democratic platform. We have pretty good success as we're heading into 2020. This is an issue for that. I think that, you know, the Democrats need to make sure they stay on that strong platform. For you, when did you start noticing the platform, the messaging that was coming from the Democrats was failing?
Yeah. So for me, as a researcher, which I think I'm going to posit as the more interesting answer than me as a politically aware human being, which follows your trajectory, it was when I did a project in 2011, and I was looking at examples of dial tests. Dial tests are, for your listeners, if you've ever watched the debates on CNN and you watch the lines go across your screen and people are going up when they like it and down when they don't, that's an online dial test. It's a way of measuring people's moment-to-moment responses. I started looking through them on a project that I was doing on how to talk about immigration and immigrant rights and noticed this very strange pattern where for Republicans, the winning message was the one where the red line, meaning their base, and the middle were trending upwards, and the third line, representing their opposition, or the Democrats, or people who were strongly pro our side, was trending downwards. And they would say, that's the winning message. And Democratic pollsters, their trend lines, when they were looking at, oh, here's your winning message, it's message A or it's message B, it was the message where all three lines would be trending upwards. So Republicans were saying that the winner looked like sort of a sideways V, two lines up, one line down, and Democratic pollsters were saying it was where all three lines were trending up. And Frank Luntz, who is sort of famously their kind of language expert, although he's apparently had some sort of come-to-Jesus moment recently and is now cares about the climate, he was very succinct about this, and he said simply, I dial for the red meat. Because the basic understanding is that if you don't have a message that your base is willing to repeat, by definition, it's not persuasive, because if your base isn't going to carry the message, the middle isn't going to hear the message. So it doesn't actually matter what the content is. And that's where I really sort of started seeing this, was in the math.
It was, and it's something that I see today. I mean, I've actually had Democrats tell me, oh, we need to kind of, and I trust me, I shouted these people down pretty good when they said to me, oh, we can just ignore the main party. We have to win over a handful of Republicans. I've said, no, that we've tried that. It has failed. And you're right. It seems like the only time the Democrats look at a winning message is when we get everyone on board. They can't just look and say, all right, we're a political party. Let's look at our base. And we go from there. It's not, you know, absolute, because, I mean, yeah, 2006, 2018, they did figure out, you know, a good, strong Democratic message wins, but it just, it seems like they try too hard and they overthink this stuff, and there's just this element that says we have to win over these moderate Republicans, and that's just not true.
Well, and it's also, what's interesting about it is that, first of all, it undermines what we already said, which is that somebody has to carry the message, because if the message is tested in some sort of box and then no one ever uttered those words again, by definition, it wasn't persuasive because
yes,
nobody heard it. But also, we've had a fundamental misunderstanding of how middle of the road slash swing slash independent voters actually respond to messaging. Mm. We have had this prevailing idea, or at least a lot of the Democratic establishment has had this prevailing idea. And by the way, this isn't just in the U.S. We see this with the Labour Party in the U.K. We see this with the Labour Party in Australia, other spots that I've worked across sort of center-left parties in the EU, where there's this prevailing idea that the middle-of-the-road voter desires a moderate or centrist position. In fact, when we do research on them, what we find is that these people are, by definition, non-ideological. They don't have set and fixed political views. And so what we find with them is that they make their selection about which view most accords with what they want based on what's to the left or right of it. So in an experiment where we give them three policy positions and we say those policy positions correspond, let's say, to red, orange, and yellow, the majority of the middle of the road want orange. But if we name three policy positions that are orange, yellow, and green, the majority of them want yellow. In other words, they want the, quote, center option without respect to what the contents of that option is. It's just purely on the basis of feeling like there's something more left and something more right.
Mm-hmm. And I think what that's a brilliant take. And I when I find that what that resonates for me is that I think the people in the middle, in the absence of Democratic leadership saying, I'm proud of my, I mean, we should have been selling the Affordable Care Act for every election. And we ran, the Democrats ran away from that issue, even though that was their strongest issue, because they felt as if they had to pander to that middle of the road. And so they didn't look like they had integrity. And for the middle of the road, I think the Republicans on the right, zealotry looks like integrity when you, the other side doesn't look like they have any kind of basis and solid concrete platform.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, if we can remember back to the moment, the now seemingly like beautiful halcyon days of the George W. Bush administration, when he said, I'm the decider, and we all sort of laughed at that derisively. In fact, what we find is that for a certain very significant category of voters, decisiveness is in and of itself attractive, that people desire the person who says, this is what I think, this is the way the world works, this is what we need to bring about and create. People are like, okay, sounds good. That must be what is true. Because again, when we perform, when we do experimentation around perception and persuasion, mobilization, around these middle-of-the-road voters, they really, I call them the good point people. So, for example, in the race class narrative research that we did and applied in Minnesota and in other places, when we asked them the question, to what extent do you agree, disagree, talking about race is divisive and sets our country back, around 70% of them agree. When we ask them, agree, disagree, talking about race is important and is how we move our country forward, same thing, 70% of them agree.
And we should mention here that on one of your podcasts for Brave New Words, you did feature Minnesota. And I find that we saw this play out in 2018. And I'll just give one race. And, you know Keith Ellison, the congressman who represented the Minnesota 5th District, African-American Muslim man, ran for the state attorney general. And we did see the Republican rolled out their campaign against him was Muslim black man. And that was quite literally. Literally all they screamed across, especially outstate Minnesota, yet he won. Now, granted, I think that his opponent did kind of, you know, didn't help his own cause on multiple levels. But at the same time, that message of fear did not win out. And by sticking to their guns, and Keith Ellison, who is a very good attorney general, by him sticking to his guns and not shying away from who he was, he ended up winning the entire state.
Right. And we saw across your state in the last cycle, and unsurprisingly, you know, it continues unabated, the same thing that we're seeing to a certain extent in the whole country, which is the use of dog whistles, mm-hmm. racially coded invectives, and a tendency to shame and blame people based on their race, based on their religious beliefs, based on their country of origin. In the case of Minnesota, sometimes the triumvirate of all three.
Yes.
For the problems that are actually caused by a handful of wealthy and well-connected people essentially taking and hoarding the spoils for their own, how else do you continue this kind of unabashed, you know, just unrepentant plutocracy except by distracting people by saying, hey, are you feeling hard up? Hey, are you feeling like you can't make ends meet? You have to have someone to blame.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Anand Shankar Osorio is joining us right now. Brave New Words is the podcast, expert on messaging. And by the way, if every Democrat listening to me follows her, we'll win pretty much every race we're in. Do you feel as if Minnesota, from your studies of this, is kind of an incubator, a petri dish, per se, for the rest of the Democratic Party across the country, that we can be in here and have a very diverse state where we have the rural parts of the state and the mining and blue-collar, you know, rural blue-collar jobs like the Iron Range, and of course, a glitzy metropolitan area, and you can still have that Democratic message and it resonates?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so, because when you look at Minnesota demographically, you know, you step back and let me give you full disclosure here. I'm from Wisconsin. I live in California, but I, you know, was raised in Wisconsin. So if you want to hang up now, I guess that's what's going to happen.
You're okay. You're good.
But, you know, why isn't Minnesota Wisconsin? Why isn't Minnesota North Dakota or South Dakota or Iowa or Michigan even, right, in terms of having been battered and been through the draconian policies that decimated, for example, unions and all of those other states, in having kind of unleashed the full extent of right-wing policies, both at the state level and then in terms of representation in Congress? Demographically speaking, Minnesota's not that different from its neighbors,
yeah,
right? So something held Minnesota back. It wasn't because Minnesota's California. It's not because you have like a remarkably different set of people in your state voting. It's because by my read and my experience, both in national politics and then in various other states, the grassroots energy and the smartness and the savviness of the groups that have worked together in Minnesota really over the last 10 years to say, look, they're running on a dog whistle. Look, they're running on deliberate division. Look, they're running on scapegoating immigrants or scapegoating refugees or scapegoating Muslims, instead of burying our head in the sand and saying, you know what, we'll just try colorblind economic populism. Mm-hmm. We're not going to talk about race. Groups in Minnesota got wise and realized that politics is not solitaire. And there is no choice to not talk about race, because the other side is talking about race every minute of every day,
mm-hmm.
usually in invectives. And so if Democrats in a state choose to, quote, stay silent about race, not go into the rabbit hole of what we have tricked ourselves into calling identity politics, then all the middle is hearing is from the other side. There's no rejoinder. There's no rebuttal. And the economic populist message can't penetrate. And in fact, what we saw in Minnesota, the reason why we did this research and we did this engagement that was about weaving together race and class and tackling these dog whistles, is because the groups on the ground, what they were seeing at the doors is that they would go to the door in greater Minnesota, and they would try to talk about economics. They would try to say health care for all, or they would try to say let's improve our schools, or they would try to say let's have a care agenda. And the person at the door would say, well, that sounds great, and I wish healthcare were cheaper. That sounds great, and I do want better education. But these Somalis, you know, or these immigrants, you know, or, you know, these inner city people, and they just couldn't have an economic conversation.
Mm-hmm. I think what you've just pointed out, the two things. One, in surrounding states, what you get is a lot of Democrats trying to run as Republican light, and that never, you know, why am I going to get the light version? I'll just get the regular version. And then the other problem is, as you just sort of you said, is that I think most people, when faced with the option of voting for the person who is undeniably throwing out racist dog whistles, and the person who's willing to confront that person, will go with the person who's willing to confront it, as opposed to go with the racist. And I think that that's the most dangerous thing for Republicans, is that if they, I think they have their base, then their base will vote for them. But the reality is that the vast majority of people, I think, are turned off by that kind of race baiting. But if you don't challenge it, It basically, you know, it like I said, it, you know, zealotry looks like integrity.
Absolutely. And if you don't challenge it and you don't have a competing storyline, right? Stories need to have origins. Otherwise, things don't make sense and our solutions do not have a foundation. So when the other side is saying, you know, why does it feel harder and harder to make ends meet? Why does it feel like the dollar's not buying what it used to? Why does it feel like things are spinning out of control and unsafe or confusing, or that, you know, things aren't the way that you remember them? If one side is presenting a story for that and they have a villain in that story, and we're just saying free college or we're saying healthcare for all, but we're not explaining how these things came to be and therefore how our solutions can actually be implemented, then our approach doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm.
I wish we had more time. I would love to get into your thoughts on the international, because you have done this. Now, there's two things I want to drive everyone to. First of all, once again, Anat Shenker Osorio, the podcast is Brave New Words. The Minnesota podcast we've talked about, but she has been Ireland, Australia. She's talked about New Zealand. So these are messages that not only resonate here in the United States, but as well are they're becoming more universal. And I think that as we've seen our politics worldwide, they're starting to fall into those similar channels. It makes a tremendous amount of sense. So I'm going to drive people to the Brave New Words website so they can listen to your podcast. But I also, ASOC Communications, clearly I think there's a lot of politicians that should, a lot of people who are looking at messaging, I think should get in touch with you.
I appreciate it.
I really think that they should. ASO Communications, it's asocommunications.com. That's okay. I'll put that link up as well, okay?
That's great.
Oh, this is brilliant, and I'm glad, because you, through your research, through your studies, through your speaking, through your intelligence, you've basically, I mean, here I am. I'm just a regular guy. I'm a guy in Minnesota. I like to vote, and I can see these patterns, and I know that they're not right. And what you have done is you give me great hope, because you validate a lot of things there through your intelligence and your research that basically tell me, you know what, I am right here. I think a lot of people need to listen to you.
Oh, I really appreciate it. I mean, you've clearly hit upon, I mean, you figured it all out on your own, and look at me having to waste all this time gathering data.
But
so, questionable who's smarter.
No, I would say definitely no. You are far smarter than me. Me stumbling, a pig finds truffles. So, you know, I'll admit that I stumble upon some of this stuff. But like I said, I think that the crazy thing is there does still seem to be this unwillingness to realize that past path, those past path these people, the Democrats have been on, is the wrong one. And if we just go down and follow more of a path that you've outlined here, it really is the pathway to success.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen it. So Brave New Words profiles 6 campaigns we've won somewhere around the world and takes you backstage at what was the message going to be? How were we going to approach it? What did we decide to do instead? How did we implement that? What were the ads that we ran, and how did we end up winning? Right, that's the big spoiler alert. Each episode is about something we won, so there's not a lot of dramatic tension. You can just know that you're going to feel good listening to it, because we're going to win in each episode. But I think that there is so much of the Democratic and Labor Party and whatever the center-right party is in the context that, you know, I'm working in, that is so much rooted in this being embattled, being problem-focused. And I often joke that I can summarize all of progressive messaging in 3 sentences. 1, boy, have I got a problem for you. 2, this is the Titanic. Would you like to buy a ticket? And 3, we're the losing team. We lose a lot. Also, we lost recently, so you should join us. And that is just sort of a default set of tendencies that we see out of left and center left parties around the world. And I think that that is partly about humility. It's partly about being people who do care about evidence, who do care about policy, who do care about facts, and think that those, you know, the facts will set us free. We'll just tell the people this is the right thing to do and this is morally right or this is what will grow the economy. And in point of fact, that is a fundamental misapprehension of how people come to judgments and make political decisions.
Anat Shenker Osorio, I've got to end it there because I'm running out of time. ASO Communications, Brave New Words. We're going to spotlight this interview. Anat, thank you very much. This has just been a pleasure. Please come on back.
No, thank you so much. And thank you for everything that Minnesota is doing to show us why and how to get our act together.
Anat Shenker Osorio, we're going to take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.